Now, straight from the headlines, we bring you the latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the San Diego Performance Academy. Today, we're going to be devoting a good portion of our show to talking about the international crises unfolding in the Ukraine and Crimea, what the issues are and what the stakes are and why that's important to the rest of the world. So I'd like to begin by reading some of the timelines of these crises from today's Washington Post. President Viktor Yanukovych, who was ousted back in the Orange Revolution in 2004 and voted back in 2010, in November, he abandoned a deal that would have brought closer ties with the European Union in favor of aligning with Russia. A month later, in December, pro-EU protesters occupied the city hall in Kiev and took over Independence Square. In February of this year, at least 88 people were killed in 48 hours as it escalated into violence. And then on February 21st, President Yanukovych signed a compromise deal with opposition leaders, and the very next day he fled Kiev, and the parliament voted to remove him and set elections for May 25th. Then, a couple of weeks ago, on February 27th, 28th, pro-Russian gunmen seized key buildings in the Crimean capital. And on March 1st, the Russian parliament approved President Vladimir Putin's request to use Russian forces in the Ukraine. Then, complicating matters even more, on March 6th, Crimea's parliament asked to join Russia and set a referendum for March 16th to do so. So, a lot happening very fast in that part of the world. So, today I've got two people with me in the studio. The first is our intern, Jessica Richmond, who is a political science major from San Diego State University. Jessica's been helping us research these issues, and I'm very pleased to have her on the show.
Thank you so much, Miriam. It's a pleasure to be here with you this morning.
Very good. And our very special guest today is Professor Phil Pride. He is a professor emeritus, retired professor from San Diego State University. He has a PhD from the University of Washington in Soviet environmental problems, and he is the author of the book Environmental Resources and Constraints in the Former Soviet Republics. So he has a lot of expertise on this part of the world. Dr. Pride, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Miriam. It's a pleasure to be here. I appreciate the invitation.
Can you start, Professor Pride, by giving us a brief history of Crimea, your area of expertise, and why it's more complex, as you say, than we've been hearing about in most of the media?
That's a very good place to start, because it is a fascinating history. There's probably very few, if any, areas on planet Earth that have a longer and more complex history than Crimea does. And it goes back to the first, let's say, outside settlers that came in there were actually the ancient Greeks. In the first millennium before the time of Christ, the Greeks moved in there. And a lot of the cities that are there are all in part Greek names that were given a long time ago. So I'm going to take about 30 seconds and just run through all the people who have lived in and controlled all or part of the Crimean Peninsula since about 1000 BC. Here we go. The Scythians, Greeks, Roman Empire, Goths, Huns, Bulgars, Khazars, Kievan Rus, the Byzantine Empire, the Mongols, even Genoa and Venice were fighting over it for a while. Crimean Tatars, a name you may not have heard that much about, that are extremely important to the area. The Ottoman Empire, the Russian Empire, independent for a few years at the time of the Revolution and Civil War, and then under the Soviet Union, Crimea was about half the time part of the Russian Republic and half the time part of the Ukrainian Republic, and then gained its independence, or Ukraine did, in 1991, at which time Crimea took on its current name, which is the Autonomous Republic of Crimea.
So turmoil is nothing new in this region.
Turmoil, but and also an extremely varied ethnic history. So it's not just Russians and Ukrainians there, although they are by far the majority people there. There's a lot of other people that have played a role there over the years.
Very good.
Can you elaborate on the strategic military interests present in the Crimean region of Ukraine, Professor?
In the Crimea, keep in mind that legally the Crimea is part of Ukraine at the present time. But ever since the breakup of the Soviet Union in 1991, about the first thing that Russia did was to sign a long-term agreement with the Ukrainian government to maintain the major, probably one of two or three most important Russian naval bases at the big seaport and naval base center of Sevastopol. And that agreement, I believe, extends until the year 2045. And nobody is going to mess with that agreement. In addition, the same harbor at Sevastopol is also the headquarters of the Ukrainian Navy. Now, when you say those two terms, the Russian Navy is the 800-pound gorilla, and the Ukrainian Navy is, you know, kind of like a 10-pound pussycat in terms of their relative military power and influence there. So, but they both have the right to be there by treaty. But you've gotten some idea of just how serious the Russian government takes that by the fact that they scuttled one of their own ships to block the harbor so the Ukrainian Navy couldn't get out.
Wow.
So that gives you some idea of how things are playing out there militarily.
Well, that definitely puts it into perspective.
Now, Professor, does the U.S. have any strategic interest or resources present in the Ukraine?
We don't directly have anything really major. If we're talking about the Ukraine as a whole, then our primary interest is with our European allies because, as has been well pointed out in the media, Western Europe does get the majority, by far the majority, of its natural gas in particular, and probably a fair amount of petroleum as well, from Russia. And those major big pipelines, some of them at least, go through Ukraine. So in theory, and this is just hypothetically, Putin could shut off that natural gas supply just by ordering some valves to be turned. Whether he would do that is a $64 question. I tend to think he wouldn't, because that would be a crisis, you know, 10 times bigger than the current crisis.
Yeah, we'll talk a little further about that later, about what the ramifications might be if such actions
right.
were to happen.
Just to the other part of your question, is there any strong economic problems or connections with the Crimea? Pretty much the answer to that question is no. I don't think either Western Europe or the United States has any direct, significant economic interest in Crimea.
I'm wondering what your professional opinion is about the protests in the Ukrainian capital that led to this coup d'etat, the ouster of President Viktor Yanukovych. Was this a righteous people's revolution, or do you think there were some hidden agendas, some extremist groups involved in that?
Well, undoubtedly, it's a complex issue. Everybody that was demonstrating in the square and so forth probably had their own reasons for doing it, but the overall question was purely a question of the future of the country, of Ukraine, and whether it was going to be associated militarily, economically, and so forth, more closely with Russia or with Western Europe. And the Russian minority in Ukraine, of course, wanted it to be associated with Russia, as did Yanukovych. But the majority of the people in Ukraine were probably more interested in trying to become more closely allied with the European Union and have their connections, economic connections and agreements and so forth, more with the West rather than with Russia.
Right. And Yanukovych, of course, is aligned very much with Russia.
Yeah. So that was certainly by far the main question they were demonstrating for the future of their country and which major power group, so to speak, it would be aligned with.
Professor, can you elaborate on the ethnic makeup of Crimea? And subsequently, do you believe that there is any validity to the reports claiming that Vladimir Putin sent in troops to Crimea to protect the ethnic Russians?
Yeah, two questions there. Let me tell you what the makeup of the population in Crimea was at the time of the only, as far as I know, the only Ukrainian census that's been done there, which was 2001. And at that time, it was 58% Russians. That's over half, 58% Russian ethnicity, 24% Ukrainian, 12% of those Crimean Tatars that you're not hearing much about, and 6% other. So it certainly is a fact that the majority of the people there are ethnically Russian and therefore tend to feel more closely aligned to Russia. Now, the second part of your question, say it again exactly what you were asking.
Is there any validity, in your opinion, to the reports claiming that Vladimir Putin sent his Russian troops into the Crimea region in order to protect the ethnic Russians?
Or is that just a pretense, in other words?
The short answer is no. I think it was pretty much a pretense. First of all, by and large, the Russians control Crimea anyway. I mean, they're the majority. They control the parliament, got the big navy base there, and so forth. The Ukrainians, either the people in Crimea, the Ukrainians in Crimea, or the Ukrainian government in Kiev, were neither one of them were posing any threat to the majority, the 58% of Russians in Crimea. So that was a pretext. And all the people with the arms there that were wearing uniforms with no insignia, I'm a little hard-pressed to think that that was some sort of interior military unit.
Good point.
Most people think they were Russian troops with no insignia.
Are there any religious overtones to the upheavals in the Crimea and the Ukraine? Does the world need to be concerned about, for example, Muslim extremism or anti-Semitic forces taking control of these areas?
At the present time, I think the answer is definitely no. In Crimea, if you add the Russians and the Ukrainians together, that's 82% of the population. They're both Eastern Orthodox Christian. And the Crimean Tatars and a small number of descendants from the old Ottoman Turks and so forth, these people are most closely related to the Turks. And the Turks, of course, are not, by and large, extremist Muslims. And in fact, Turkey is part of NATO. So
moderate Muslims to the degree that
right.
So, involved at all.
Short answer is no, I don't think religion plays any role right now.
The big question, of course, on many people's minds here is that we've been hearing a lot of saber rattling among American leaders, European leaders, even some of the conservative forces out there talking about what should be done about the whole situation. Secretary of State Kerry has said everything is on the table right now, which of course can be code for everything up to and including potential military intervention, which some of the conservatives have actually been openly advocating for. Mm-hmm. I would like to know what your view is of the likelihood or non-likelihood that the U.S. could become militarily involved, that this could lead to another war, and what the potential consequences of military intervention by either the U.S. or Europe in this part of the world could be.
At the present time, I don't think there's much chance of any military action taking place, but an awful lot depends on how much President Putin wants to push this. You mentioned the referendum in a week, and that is just the Crimea. And they're going to vote on whether they want to secede from Ukraine and become part of Russia. I think everyone expects that will pass rather handily because, remember, 58% of the people there are Russian. And I would expect the vote, assuming that it's a valid vote and nobody is doing anything to influence it, that will break down strictly between the Russians and the others. So if you wanted to put money on the table, you'd say 58% are going to vote for it and the other 42 probably not. But it will pass. And I don't think anybody doubts that it will pass in Crimea. Now, I'm no expert on the Ukrainian constitution, but I've heard reports in the media that the Ukrainian constitution would require a vote of the entire country before any part such as Crimea could secede. If that's true, then the really important question is, what will people, meaning everybody from Putin to the West and everybody, how will they consider the vote next Monday?
Yes, and in your opinion, would the international community even recognize Crimea as a part of Russia or as an autonomous region?
Well, yeah, just finish what I was leading into slowly into that question. What is going to matter is who considers the referendum next Monday to be binding. Is it a binding referendum? In other words, does that vote by itself authorize the Crimea to separate from Ukraine and become part of Russia? As I say, the Ukrainian constitution apparently requires a vote of the whole country. I would have trouble imagining Putin would want that to happen because I would assume, just based on the ethnicities involved and the numbers, that would not pass in the Ukraine as a whole.
So what happens? What are the ramifications?
It depends
on if the Crimeans vote and say, we want to become, we want to join Russia, and the Ukrainians vote and say, no, we don't want to let Crimea join Russia, then what?
That's a very good question. I think any answer to that is speculative, and it really depends on what Putin does. If Putin says, after the referendum next Monday, that he says, okay, that's it. As far as I'm concerned, that means Crimea has left the Ukraine and is now will have a vote, which of course would pass, to annex Crimea into Russia. If he says that, you're going to hear a lot of howling and complaining. Would that lead to war? I doubt it very much. Nobody is in a position to move armies, not NATO, not the U.S., nobody, into Crimea for the purposes of trying to keep Crimean Peninsula part of Ukraine. The stakes are just way too high, and Putin could probably get away with that, except the United States would then say, okay, there's going to be sanctions. And I don't think anybody spelled out exactly what they would be, but we would put some sanctions into play against Russia.
So economic sanctions.
Probably economic sanctions, yeah. Now, Putin has got the card to answer that. For one thing, he's already said that it could affect meaning Russia's cooperation with the U.S. to try and control atomic development in Iran. So far, Russia has always considered Iran an ally. Right. But they have kind of said, yeah, maybe we'll agree to certain terms for controlling nuclear development in Iran. He could say, nope, that's off the table. We're not there anymore. We're not going to cooperate with you. That would be a major setback for the U.S.
This kind of echoes of the Cold War in a way here where we had
absolutely. We're definitely hearing echoes of the Cold War, yeah. And the other thing he could do, which would be even huger, would be simply to order someone to turn the valves and stop the flow of natural gas to Western Europe. Mm. That would be huge.
The huge stakes for Europe.
That would be huge. And I can't imagine that Putin would actually do that, but then nobody imagined he'd send 20,000 troops into Crimea either. So we just don't know how much of a risk taker he is. My feeling, this is just personally a personal opinion, is that he's willing to push things quite a ways, but there's a point at which he won't push any further.
He's shrewd, in other words. He's crazy.
Shrewd. Yeah, he's very shrewd. He's certainly not dumb. And he, like every Russian leader before him and Soviet leader before him, does not want a war with the United States. He realizes, and certainly Obama and every American president realizes, that would be a total disaster for both countries.
So in your opinion, if the Crimean region were to become a part of Russia, do you believe that Russian aspirations for more land in Ukraine would cease? Or do you feel that Putin might push further into Crimea?
That's an excellent question. Yeah, that question really deserves a couple minutes to respond to because it's very important. One thing I really want to emphasize in this interview before it ends is that there are really two questions here. One is Crimea and what's going on there in terms of disassociating from the Ukraine and so forth. The other thing is what might happen next in terms of Ukrainian-Russian relationship. And as you started the whole interview, that's really what was behind the protests in Kiev and so forth. The thing to understand here, which has not been brought out in the media all that well, is that there's another part of Ukraine that is very heavily Russian. And that is the far eastern part of the Ukraine. If you look at the map, you think of it as about the eastern one-fifth or so, extending from the Black Sea all the way up to where you get into the Russian Republic. And the reason the Russians are there is that that is probably, in terms of heavy industry, the most important part of the Ukraine. It's what's called the Donets Basin, which is a major coal mining area. Not too far away, in an area that's somewhat more Ukrainian, is a big city called Kryvyi Rog. And near there is some of the largest iron ore deposits in the world. And those two things have made that area the Pittsburgh, if you will.
So Russia could have its eye on taking back those Soviet resources Union. Ultimately.
They could. And again, this is why whether you consider the referendum in Crimea so important, because he could have a similar referendum in some of the eastern provinces of Ukraine. And I don't have access to any population data there. I'm guessing that unlike Crimea, in those areas, the Russians are not a majority. The Ukrainians probably are still a majority, but the Russians are a heavy minority.
So it might come down to voter turnout.
Maybe. Again, it's a question of how much does Putin want to push this? I kind of think that would be pushing it a little too far, but who knows? He's the one that is running the show right now. He's got all the cards and he's playing them, and it's just a question of which cards is he going to play and where does he stop playing.
Fascinating. Well, I know this is certainly an issue that's of vital importance to not only many people around the world, but even many people right here in San Diego County. We do have a lot of Russian and Ukrainian immigrants in our region. I know I was at a Russian-Ukrainian restaurant just the other day where the waitress was from Russia and the owners were from the Ukraine, and they're all very concerned about what's going on. They have family still in this part of the world.
As far as Ukrainian interest, you mentioned we have some in San Diego.
Yeah.
The population of in the southern part of Saskatchewan and Manitoba in Canada is hugely Ukrainian. That's where they all came because the climate and the growing conditions there for agriculture are identical to the Ukraine.
The Ukraine is also known as the breadbasket of that part of the world. Mm-hmm. To what degree are agricultural resources important here?
They are important from the standpoint that if there's anything that's really important to the Ukrainian economy, it's agriculture. They have excellent soils. Some of the best soils in the world are in Ukraine. And just to go back to the Soviet period before it broke up, the total arable land in Ukraine was only about 15% of the USSR total, but they were producing like 25 to 30% of almost any agricultural commodity.
So it's an important strategic.
Meat, vegetables, potatoes, everything. Yeah, and so I would have to assume that they still export, just based on those numbers, that they still export food to probably into Russia and other parts around there. So yeah, the agriculture is extremely important to Ukraine.
More to the issue of the Crimean region, if Russia does allow Crimea to become a part with them, what does this mean to further Russian aspirations in reference to the Baltic states, Lithuania? Do they have any worries about further intrusions?
Yeah. Without any doubt, they're worried. I would be worried right now. I just looked at some numbers and found something extremely interesting. Between World War I and the German invasion in 1940, the Baltic states were independent for 23 years. Since the breakup of the Soviet Union in 1991, it is exactly 23 years to today. And right now, Russia is again looking expansionist. So yeah, I would worry a lot if I were in the Baltic republics. Having said that, I cannot imagine in a million years Putin would go in there because the Baltic states are so closely allied now to Western Europe that you're basically talking of an attack on NATO if they were to send troops into any of the Baltic republics. And keep in mind, it's not just the Baltic republics. In 1895, under the final years of the Russian Empire, Russia also controlled Poland and Finland. And so
it was a major world power in those days.
Yeah, the Russian Empire was bigger than the Soviet Empire. And so in addition to the Baltic republics, Finland was part of Russia for 100 years, and they fought the famous 1939 Winter War in Finland. So everybody's worried.
Thank you very much for that fascinating bit of history. We're certainly going to stay tuned, stay on this, and we greatly appreciate you taking the time to come in and educate our listeners about the very important issues unfolding in Crimea and the Ukraine, Professor.
It was my pleasure to be here. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yes, thank you so much, Professor, and I wish you a beautiful day.
Thank you very much.